Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by my fearless co-host, a man I'm eternally grateful for putting up with me. It's Trey Watkins. How you doing, Trey?
Doing good. I'm doing pretty good.
So I sent out a tweet earlier today. I don't know if you saw it or not, from the Eric Jensen Sport account. And the tweet simply read, "It's go time." I view today as the start of the NFL season. I know we're a little bit out from training camp, but we've just been doing this a little peek behind the scenes. Me and Trey have not seen each other a lot, I feel like, or talked to each other that much over the past, 3 months?
Yeah.
Would you say that's a fair assessment?
That's probably a fair assessment.
Which I think is good, because I think if we had kept doing like 2 shows a week throughout the entire offseason, we would have gotten very sick of each other. him more so of me than me of Trey. I am easy to get sick of because I am a crazy person. But here we are, Trey. I mean, I hope you're ready, because I am a crazy person. And this will really be the test. A co-host on this show has never really lasted longer than 2 seasons. I've been doing this for like 5 years now. So 5 seasons now. This will be season 5, I think. So here we are. Just a little housekeeping. We're going back to 2 shows a week. You heard the win total show earlier this week. We are recording a week before because I think my work schedule is going to get a little bit hectic again. But even if my work schedule gets hectic, Trey, I'm still going to do 2 shows a week. We'll find some way, somewhere, somehow, even if we have to record double shows for some reason on my off days, if you're cool with that, at least. But yeah, man, it's the NFL season here. So we're going to go 2 shows a week. Hopefully get through the division previews by August. Mm-hmm. We'll do an August show. In August, I'm thinking we'll do 1 show that's kind of a new show each week and the other show that's like a recap of the preseason. We'll probably take the 3rd week of the preseason off because it won't matter. And then we're just going to come back. And then we'll come back whenever the week, Friday before week 1 is with our preview show. So that's kind of how things are going to go. Trey, does saying all that make you scared, make you want to throw things at a wall, make you want to say, Eric, why are you doing this to me?
No, because life is just one big freaking roller coaster as it is. So this is minor on the, I guess, life extravaganza you love to put me through sometimes. So it's fun. It'll be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, I lost you there for half a second because I took my earbuds out. But I know that I put you through a lot as a person. I know that I am I'm a high maintenance kind of guy.
You are.
So I appreciate you sticking with me. And man, we're gonna start with the AFC East today.
Okay.
We're gonna go do division previews a little bit differently this year. I decide I need to change it up purely for my sake. I'm getting bored of doing the all division team each year. Get bored of that. So we are going to go through, and let me just walk the people through the way this is going to go. So let me pull up the text because I still don't have this memorized. We're going to talk about the best position group from each team, the worst position group, the QB outlook for each team. We'll have a dealer's choice segment where one of us will pick just a random topic we want to talk about with the team. And then we'll do team 4 and team ceiling. And we'll kind of rotate between doing both those things. Me and Trey have texted about this. So I'm hoping that this goes off without a hitch. But as always, bear with us as this is our first time in this format. And I'm sure we'll get much better going into our next one. But before we start, Trey, I just want to know from you, What is like, what's like a phrase or a word or a sentence or two that to you describes the AFC East going into this season?
Let's say inconsistent and let's say dull.
Dull. Interesting. I have the words intriguing come to mind and different feel like the words I would use to describe. And now we can kind of get into the team. So we're going to start with the Buffalo Bills, obviously last year, AFC conference championship. They made it there. They were one of the final four teams in the NFL. Unfortunately, the last time we saw and talked about the Bills, we were talking about them getting relatively blown out by the Kansas City Chiefs. But here we are now, a new year for the Bills. In their best position group, if I'm breaking it down right now, I am going to go, I'm going to go a little bit off the beaten path. I think the best position group they have is their offensive line. I think that the offensive line from last year to this year sees very minimal changes. They bring basically everyone back. You're going to have Deion Dawkins at tackle. He's a good left tackle. You're going to have John Feliciano at center. Cody Ford played okay last year. Mitch Morris was a great addition for them. And they have Darrell Williams at the right tackle position. I thought the line was solid last year, and really they didn't lose anyone off the offensive line this offseason. And that was such a, I thought, a such a huge part of, I just thought that that was such a huge, they did lose guard Brian Winters, which we'll see how that affects him. But I just thought the line was so good last year. Josh Allen felt like he always had a ton of time to complete the passes that Brian Daboll was setting up for him. So I'm going to go with the offensive line as the best position group on this team. What do you think about that, Troy?
That's interesting. I mean, the group on paper looks relatively good, I guess, but I just still, you know, flashback to, you know, how not, I'm not sure if they, you know, the offensive line was one of the big causes of this problem, but how bad the Bills run game was. I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, because of the limitations that their running back room has right now, aside from Zach Moss, but there just wasn't really a lot of push in that run game, I guess you could say. Now, maybe that was maybe because of scheme, because the Bills don't really have the most diverse run game when it comes to blocking schemes and play designs, but it just, I don't know. I'm not all that high on the Bills offensive line from a run blocking standpoint, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. And I mean, the running back position is definitely a really interesting thing that this team has going on. Devin Singletary was off and on last year. Zach Moss didn't really make an impact. You wonder what he looks like in year two. But I feel like if they could add a running game, they were already so successful with the play action. They're kind of case A, actually, for why having a successful running game and running play action don't correspond at all and why you should run play action anyways. But if they got a solid running game and they started to see some stacked boxes, man, I feel like that'd just be a whole nother level for Josh Allen to kind of feast off of in the passing game. So I think that the running back room is definitely a weakness on the team. But it's something that I think it can get a little bit. I believe Zach Moss can progress in year two.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's really all about, you know, well, of course it's about progressing with Zach Moss in year two, but I think Zach Moss was actually pretty good, you know, aside from the circumstances of, you know, the run game, you know, not finding a groove at all last year. So his progression will actually be really, really fun to watch because I actually thought he was pretty good last year.
I didn't think he was productive enough personally, but that could just be me. It'll be interesting to see how that that pans out. All right, Trey, it is now your turn. Where are you taking us for the worst position group on this team?
Worst position group on this team. You know, fair enough, before the draft, I was going to say maybe pass rusher because I wasn't all that in love with their pass. I wasn't all that in love with their pass rushing situation. But I'll go over to it's kind of difficult because the Bills roster is actually pretty nice, you know.
Yeah.
Up and down. So I don't know. Maybe I'll say tight end. Maybe. I'm not all that high on Dawson Knox. I mean, he's had his moments, I guess, but he's not really the most game-breaking tight end in the league, maybe not even in a division. So, and even the depth behind him. I mean, who's behind him at tight end? Let me pull this back up again. I mean, Dawson Knox is probably your starter, and then you have right now you have some guys named Nate Becker, Reggie Gilliam, Quentin Morris, Tommy Sweeney, and Jacob Hollister. Jacob Hollister is the only name I know out of that group. So forgive me if I'm being a bit of a casual, but that's just the way I see the Bills tight end group right now. That's just the way I see it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's totally fair to say. I think you have a tough, I won't make you pick. We're going to switch back and forth who's A and B here as we go along. So you won't have to pick the worst position group every time, but it is tough to pick. I mean, the Bills are just a solidly constructed roster. I don't look and see a whole lot of weaknesses either. To me, I think where I see a little bit is cornerback depth. We kind of talked about that a little bit on an earlier show, I feel like a few weeks ago with Nick. I don't know exactly who their cornerback two is going to be. I'm not really a fan of Levi Wallace, but we'll see what happens. And then Jerron Johnson, you're going to have to count on him a lot as well, aside from Trey White, who obviously is very good, one of the best corners in the league, but you got to have more than one guy. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that works out. Their safeties also, you know, Jordan Poyer kind of had a down year last year with Micah Hyde. They were not, you know, the top of the line. They weren't detriments to the team, but they weren't like the elite players that they have been in the past either. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I'm a little bit concerned by the secondary. All right, Trey, what is the quarterback outlook for this team? Let's talk a little bit about Josh Allen.
Here's the deal, really, with Josh. I mean, we all know the season that he had, the regular season that he had in 2020. He looked like an MVP candidate. He fixed so many flaws of his game that painfully showed up on tape. And just even watching him live during his rookie year in 2019, his mechanics looked better. His footwork was better. And probably the most important thing, he threw a touch. That was the one thing that Josh Allen hadn't done, you know, throughout his career. You know, at that point, he was not able to throw it much consistently enough, and that's what caused the inaccuracy issues. That's what caused this offense just to not flow the way it should when you have a quarterback with as much talent as he has. So when he started throwing with more touch, it unlocked a whole different strategy or possibilities for this offense. And a lot of credit goes to Brian Daboll, who worked so much with Josh Allen, aside from the work that Josh Allen did in the offseason with Jordan Palmer, I believe, who has done a really good job at helping quarterbacks with their mechanics throughout the summer and wherever Jordan Palmer might work out with his guys. But Brian Daboll credit to him, did a lot of good work with Josh Allen in the offseason leading up to the season. And even during the season, Brian Daboll put Josh Allen in a lot of good places to succeed. He was really good throwing the ball deep. And, I mean, you got to give credit to Stephon Diggs for that, too. Stephon Diggs was an incredible deep threat wide receiver for the Bills last season. And Josh Allen was really good throwing intermediate and short. And those were just the two areas, you know, like I said, that he struggled a good bit in. So, real good credit to Josh Allen, you know, for fixing his stuff and finally, you know, tapping into the potential that so many thought he had coming into the draft a couple of years ago. Looking, you know, at his outlook, you know, now for 2021 and beyond, I think it still looks bright. Honestly, I think you would agree, Eric. I think his outlook still looks bright for 2021 and beyond. The only concern that I guess you could really have for him right now is that he was really bad in the playoffs. He reverted back to old Josh Allen, you know, in the playoffs, even in those two wins that they had against Indianapolis and Baltimore. It was only against that blowout loss against Kansas City that his problems were really magnified and put under more of a microscope. So flushing that down the drain, getting back to that regular season Josh Allen for the regular season in 2021 and then carrying it over into the playoffs, I think that's just the next step for him. So I think he's in a real good position to succeed once again. I just want to see him have some more success in the playoffs before I truly, you know, start throwing all my money towards him being one of those top-tier quarterbacks in the league, honestly.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, there was definitely cause for concern those last two playoff games. I thought he played better in the Chiefs game, but the Ravens game was certainly not his best performance. But devil's advocate here, I thought one of his best games of the year was the wild card game against the Colts. I thought that was one of the best games he had played the entire season. He made some spectacular plays in that one. So I think that I'm with you, Trey. I feel like Josh Allen's outlook is kind of bright, but maybe we can expect him to come down just a little bit. Maybe he's not an MVP candidate this year, but still a top 10 guy and a guy that, you know, can take his team to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Dealer's choice for me here. I'm just going to say this team's relying a lot on Cole Beasley to remain one of the best slot receivers in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pretty consistently, he was ranked week by week as like the top PFF wide receiver somehow, some way. If he regresses to what Cole Beasley was before that, which is just a solid role player, they kind of lose a weapon. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little bit concerned by the Bills wide receiver room outside of Stephon Diggs because Emmanuel Sanders is getting older and Cole Beasley is just, he's kind of a gamble to me. Isaiah McKenzie, he could be a guy that might kind of step up. I was listening to some other Bills stuff this week in preparation for this. They sound pretty high on him, but the wide receiving core, it just feels like a little bit more of a question than I think people are making it out to be. That's not to say I think it's bad. I just think they're counting on a lot on Cole Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders to not fall off a little bit. And they're both older players.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Especially, you know, with the plethora of injuries that he had last year, especially he was fighting a weird or a serious sounding, I think it was, an ankle or knee injury that he was finding the playoffs, played mm-hmm. through it and looked like it didn't really hurt all that bad. So they got to find some sort of youth there to at least offset and take some of that burden off Cole Beasley because he's not getting any younger. And those injuries for those slot guys, even though some of the great slot guys feel like invincible beings when it comes to injuries. The injuries can pile up and they can start to lose their effectiveness pretty quickly. So find some youth there and take some of that burden off Cole Beasley. That should be one of the priorities for this Bills offense this fall.
All right, ceiling and floor for the Bills. Trey, I'll let you go ceiling here. What do you think the ceiling for the Bills is record-wise?
I have to take a look at their schedule. But, I mean, looking at their roster now, I mean, obviously the ceiling for this team is at least 12, 13 wins, honestly, just because of how, you know, I guess you could say unknown their division is. But just looking over their schedule now, I mean, they have the Lions, Bears, Packers, probably without Aaron Rodgers, Steelers with questions, Dolphins with questions, Washington football. Oh, wait, I was looking over preseason. Whoops. Steelers, that's week one questions, Dolphins, Washington. I mean, the schedule doesn't look all that hard. I mean, there's a week five game against Kansas City. I mean, Jacksonville in week 9. This schedule does not look that hard at all. I mean, there's a couple games on here that maybe scream a challenge for the Bills, but I don't know. I think with the schedule that they have, 12, 13 wins is probably maybe even 14 wins, maybe ceiling for this team, honestly. So
I'll go floor. I feel like the floor, they've got a pretty high floor. You know, 10 is about the lowest I'd expect from him. If Josh Allen really was to back off a lot, 10-7, I feel like, is probably where you're at. But even if you're that, you're challenging for a wild card spot. But I, you know, we talked about this in the contenders game. Both you and I believe the Bills are a Super Bowl contender. And yeah, we will end up seeing what happens with that down the line. All right, Trey. Here is where we make this complicated, where we switch up what we did a little bit. It now falls to you. It now falls to you. Who is the best position group on the Miami Dolphins?
On the Miami Dolphins? I want to see. That's okay. The best position group on the Miami Dolphins. I'm trying to decide between their defensive line and their corner group. I think I'll slide with their corner group, honestly. I mean, Xavien Howard, Byron Jones, those are two legit number one corners, you know, side by side. And their front seven doesn't make anything even any easier for offenses. So we talk so much about this Dolphins defense and how much potential it has to ascend into one of the best in football. Byron Jones and Xavien Howard are a big part of that whole process of lifting this Dolphins defense into a national sort of candidate for one of the best defenses in the league. So I'll say their corner group, but if somebody else says their defensive line or maybe their linebacking core, I wouldn't be mad at you for saying that either. I just really love their corner group at this point.
Interesting. I wouldn't go in that direction. I would go offensively, actually. But as far as worst position groups go, I'm going to go offensive line. Listen, I know you draft Liam Eikenberg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that you bring in some guys, but, like, this was a terrible offensive line last year.
Was.
And you made like 2 or 3 changes, and did they pass on Penei Sewell?
They did.
I just feel like they've added a ton of wide receiving talent. Wide receiving core is stacked. I mean, Will Fuller's going to be suspended for a few games when he comes in for just that first for the opener, but they're going to have Will Fuller, Devontae Parker, Jalen Waddle, and Mike Gesicki. That is a really good, that's a good receiving set right there. Like, you're going to be able to get things done passing wise. But if Tua has no time again and the line sucks, that could really be a problem. And I still think the line is the worst position group within the team right now.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, so that's just kind of where I'm at with worst position groups. All right, now it's where you go back to you. you to give us quarterback outlook. What do we expect from Tua this year?
I mean, after this, the bad season that he had last year, I mean, can it really get any worse? I mean, considering the actual talent that he has and the potential that he still has to grow, I mean, it can't really get all that worse, right? I mean, let's just say this. Tua wasn't, like, really, like, horrible. He wasn't horrible. He was just painfully average to below average. And that's not what you want, you know, from your top three draft picks. So, with all the weapons that he now has, I guess the Dolphins are really banking on him to find that potential and unlock it to some degree this year. But like you brought up the offensive line, and if Tua doesn't have time, then it won't matter in the slightest. So it'll be interesting to see how Tua develops, you know, this year, you know, with the shortcomings on the offensive line. I don't know. I mean, it can't really get any worse than what he had last year. So that's probably my assessment with Tua for right now.
I feel really weird when I talk about Tua. I don't know if you feel this way, but I just feel like, and it's hard as a Broncos fan, like, because you could say the same thing about Drew Lock, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's actually a dumb thing to say. And when I hear people say that on Twitter, it's pisses me off.
Really?
Because Drew Lock, he has played a 16-game season. He has played like 18 games at this point in his NFL career. You have a sample size. Tua played what last year? 6 games? Like, he barely played last year. They purposely started Ryan Fitzpatrick for a long time. And then when Tua struggled, they brought Fitzpatrick in. Last year was very much a redshirt year for Tua, I feel like. And I think people who are saying, oh, well, he like, man, he better come out of a gate and be like the answer, or he's out of there. No, you've got to give him a full 16 games. And it might very well be that he comes in and the Dolphins aren't great for the first 5 weeks of the season. But I think that this is a team that has the trajectory of kind of what the Cardinals were a year ago, which was with Kyler Murray in his rookie season, a very average team in the first half, and then they kind of took off down the stretch in the second half and became this place where DeAndre Hopkins ended up getting traded to and all this stuff. This is not the year for the Dolphins. I just don't think it's the year for the Dolphins. I feel like next year is the year for the Dolphins. Like you've got to give Tua some time to grow, and you got to give your quarterback a little bit of time to grow. So that's,
I mean, the only thing I would say to that is that when Tua did play, there were a lot of times when Tua looked really bad. Like that's the only thing I would like say. And a lot of that can be attributed, you know, to the lack of actual true game time that he got. I'm just saying the playing time that Tua did have, there are a lot of times where he did not look good at all, like bad. So, but of course, all things can change. So we'll just have to wait until the season starts.
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely be interesting to see kind of how things play out with Tua this year. But I just feel like people need to be a little bit more patient. I know that doesn't exist in NFL franchises. Trust me, I know. I root for the Broncos, and I've been saying we need to get Drew Lock out of there after he's only played like basically a full season. Sometimes it takes time, and you know, Tua, it could definitely be a guy where it might not click early this year, but I think at some point this year, we will see enough where he remains the Dolphins guy. Yeah. Not everybody can be Patrick Mahomes. Not everybody can be, you know, Baker. Not everybody can be Lamar, where you just get into the league and you just blow up. Like,
yeah, of course.
That's not every NFL quarterback. Sometimes, you know, it takes time. So my dealer's choice for the Dolphins is going to be, I don't really understand what you see in the linebacking core. Like, can you talk up the linebackers for me? Because you keep saying, oh, they're front seven. Like, they run a 3-4. Their edge guys are their linebackers. Like,
maybe I should have said maybe a little bit of their inside linebacking core. I like the talent that they have there.
Okay. I'm not a huge Jerome Baker fan.
You're not?
To be honest with you. I don't know who Vince Beagle is, to be completely honest with you. Like, everybody keeps – I don't know, Trey. Everybody keeps telling me, oh, the Dolphins' defense is great, but, like – maybe I'm just ignorant, but I judge some defenses by name. and I know that's dumb, but like, I don't know, dude. This just feels like a really unproven group. I'd have to dig in much deeper to the Dolphins. I don't know if I 100% believe in the linebacking core. I've seen Byron Jones lockdown guys. I've seen Xavien Howard play like an all pro last year. I believe in the secondary, but like, the guy I have the most confidence of is Emmanuel Ogba, and he's Emmanuel Ogba. He's not like a difference. Like, he's not a difference making pass rusher. Like, I don't know. I'm a little bit confused where people fall in love with the Dolphins front seven. I'm just a little bit confused by that personally.
I mean, I guess that's fair because the Dolphins front seven isn't filled with a whole bunch of household names. I mean, when you scour, you see some names maybe that you heard of, but, you know, they aren't the greatest of individual talents, which I completely understand. It's just I think they're a well-coached and a well-performing unit, and it's been that way probably since the tail end of – Brian Flores' first year in Miami. They've just been a good unit. So that's where I'm coming from. That's my stance on it.
Gotcha. All right. We're going to flip it here. Dolphins floor for you this time. Floor. I'll go see one.
If the world, you know, collapses on Tua this year, and the offensive line is bad, and the defense isn't as good as potentially advertised, which can all, you know, happen when you don't have the best of individual talents on defense, and you know, maybe things just don't click with your quarterback, and the offensive line, of course, can certainly be bad. But if things don't really click, you know, I think with the way this roster as it is, and, you know, with how good the coaching staff is, I think the floor is probably maybe for me 7-8 wins, something like that. Because I think I believe they got to 10 last year, and that was, you know, due to a lot of crazy breaks that they got throughout the year. I can remember just one off the top of my head, that Raiders game. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick delivers that crazy, insane downfield pass to get the offense in position to, I think it was to win the game. I mean, he got the face mask penalty as well. So there's just a lot of breaks that this team got last year. And as you know, these breaks don't come around year to year. They just don't, because it's just, they're involved with luck and football. I mean, it takes a lot of luck to win in football, but you can't count on luck. Some point you got to depend on skill and scheme and coaching. So, I think this floor is probably 7-8 wins. I won't say 9 because 9 probably seems too big of a number to me personally. So I'll stick with 7 or 8.
Ceiling, I think 11. I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised if they got more than that. But yeah, I think that, you know, if all things break right, they can be an 11-win team. I just feel like this to me, I view the Dolphins the same way I view the Broncos right now, as a team that's like 8 to 9 wins. That's 7 to 9 wins. That's kind of where I think I have the Dolphins going. Moving on. Oh, here they are. The New England Patriots, as we switch up again, and I go best position group for the Patriots first. It's interesting. I kind of wonder where I want to go here. I feel like the clear and obvious choice is the secondary. You know, okay. Stephon Gilmore is going to play. That's basically been reported at this point. J.C. Jackson, a good second corner to have. Devin McCourty's still back there. Adrian Phillips back there. Kyle Duggar showed some things last year. Everybody seems to be really high on him.
Yep.
I think that that right there is the strength of your team. Like you have a really good secondary, and that's really always been the characteristics of the defense that Bill Belichick runs, because he can stunt up quarterback pressure. I'm not afraid of that. But he can't cover up, you know, the holes that he had last year in the secondary. And he fixed it. He looked at his team and he said, after last year, he said, we will never be a talent deficient team again. And he went out and he spent money. And I think he did a good job. And I think that shows in the secondary. And it's just going to be really helpful to have Stephon Gilmore for a full year. It's going to be really, really helpful. And I like the secondary. Where's the weak spot on this Patriots team, Trey, unless you had anything else to say about strengths?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head with their strengths. You know, being in the secondary. I'm high on Kyle Duggar as well. I was one of the guys that was banging on the table for him pre-draft the last offseason. So, yeah, I think he's one of the guys that's really going to step up this year. I think you could have put offensive line for best position group as well. They got Trent Brown. They still have Isaiah Wynn, David Andrews. They have some guys back there. So, I like that offensive line. Let's see. Worst position group. That's a tough one for me. Okay, I'll go, and I'm not saying this position group is necessarily bad. I'm just saying it's full of uncertainty at the moment, to the point where it's probably the worst position group in terms of what you know, what you have, you know? So I'll say quarterback for right now. Because, I mean, I want to believe in Cam Newton so bad, like I really do. But the things that went down last year, the inaccuracy he showed, the lack of arm strength, some of the mind-boggling decisions and turnovers that he had at some points last year, it hurts to watch Cam like that. Now, I'm hoping that the first, you know, two or three games before Newton got COVID, I'm hoping that was probably, you know, what he can be in this Patriots offense, because he was really good at that point. And then after COVID, he sort of just fell off a cliff, honestly. So if Cam Newton isn't, you know, up to par, then it's going to limit the potential effectiveness of this Patriots offense 100%. Because, you know, looking along, their tight end group is good. Their running back room, you know, showed a lot in light of the circumstances last year. And the wide receiver group is much improved this year. So that's the thing where I'm most concerned, you know, with Cam Newton. And even Mac Jones. Mac Jones is a rookie. He's unproven. He has his questions coming into this rookie year. And even Jared Stidham. Jared Stidham has not shown anything to say that he could be the quarterback of the future of this Patriots team, and the Patriots obviously feel the same way since they drafted Mac Jones. And, you know, Brian Hoyer, you know what you're getting with Brian Hoyer, a backup that can run the offense. He's run it before, but he's just not the talent, you know, the game-changing talent that you want at your quarterback spot. So quarterback, that's probably where I'm standing, you know, in terms of worst position group, you know, not just because of skill, though, because of uncertainty and the unknown that you have with all four, well, three of those guys on those rosters, since you know what you're getting with Brian Hoyer. So,
yeah. I would have gone running back. Yeah. I'll be kind of surprised if Sony Michel's on the roster come week one, because Damian Harris is probably going to be the running back one. And Sony Michel is just not a good football player. so I've just been, that's a realization I came to last year. I just kind of was like, oh, he hasn't done anything. And it's been like 4 years into his career now. So, yeah. So running back, a little bit concerned by that. Quarterback outlook for me. Think about your dealer's choice here, Trey. Quarterback, man. You kind of touched on it, but I want to talk about Mac Jones, because I am curious to see what he can be in this system. Because there's a lot of negatives that people throw out about him, like, oh, he's not mobile. He misses deep throws sometimes. He had some questionable stuff at his pro day, blah, 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 blah. But, like, okay. Tom Brady wasn't overly mobile. Tom Brady had good pocket awareness, and I think that is something that he developed over time. So I think Mac Jones can develop that. You know, Mac Jones showed at Alabama he can make the throws. He's not Patrick Mahomes, but I don't think that's what Bill Belichick wants. What Bill Belichick wants is a guy that's gonna make the right throws and not turn the ball over. And I think that's what Mac Jones is. And I think if you put enough talent around Mac Jones, he can be a guy that can be very successful under Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. That's all I want to say about the quarterback outlook, Trey. I just feel like people have been kind of crapping on Mac Jones all offseason. And, you know, the Patriots drafted him for a reason. Like, I think they can make this work. And if Bill Belichick believes he can make this work, I believe it can work. I'm not going to say he's a top 10 quarterback or anything crazy like that, but, like, he can be a top half NFL quarterback. And if you have that and a talented team around him, you could be a playoff team every year.
No, that's fair. I mean, it's hard to, you know, slide, you know, Mac Jones in the same conversation as Tom Brady when it comes, you know, trying to compare quarterbacks that aren't all that mobile. I mean, I think some of the criticism that Mac Jones has gotten, you know, this offseason has been a little bit unfair, because, like you said, there's been a lot of non-mobile quarterbacks that have had success in this league. It's just that teams love mobile quarterbacks so they can have an extra element of security when it comes to scheme and success that you have on the offensive side of the ball. I think dealer's choice for me, I'll go with maybe a little bit of an X factor here, because I'm actually really keen on seeing how, this group does. But I'm really excited, you know, to see how this dual tight end system works with Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. New England had a dual tight end system, you know, a couple years back. You know, you remember the Aaron Hernandez, rest his soul, and Aaron Hernandez and the Rob Gronkowski days when they were both just dominating secondaries across the league, because they both brought so many different things to the game. I think Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, I mean, they have a chance, you know, be better than that. I think Jonnu Smith, he's probably the more unknown, you know, in terms of variables, because he hasn't had a lot of production, but when he's gotten that production, he's really, really good. Hunter Henry is more the proven commodity, though. So I'm actually really excited to see how that dual tight end system works in New England.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Hunter Henry and John Smith end up doing this year. I agree. All right. I'll go ceiling here. I think the Patriots' ceiling is 11 wins. That's where I put it. And I think that might be a little bit high even, but I give an extra win because of the Belichick factor. So I think I would have said 10 if Bill Belichick wasn't the coach, but Bill Belichick's a coach. So I think 11. 11's the ceiling.
That's fair. I think their floor, just because of how weird the quarterback situation is right now, and maybe I guess just how uncertain, you know, the offensive outlook, you know, looks like right now, I think their floor could be 9, 10 wins, maybe.
I'd go lower.
You go lower?
I think the floor is somewhere around like 6 or 7.
6 or 7. I mean, I could see that, but I just don't think Bill Belichick is going to end up having back-to-back bad years. I mean, he infused so much talent on his football team. I mean, it remains to be seen how that talent, you know, gels together, but I just can't see Bill Belichick having back-to-back bad seasons, you know, especially when he gets, you know, Dante Hightower back. He had an opt-out from last offseason. You know, like I said, he infused so much talent to this team. I just don't see back-to-back bad seasons from Bill Belichick.
All right. The Jets. Trey. Brother. The best position group on the Jets.
I wanna screw around and joke on the Jets, you know, because they've just been excellent, excellent targets for my football related jokes and slander because, you know, they've been that bad. But, you know, they infuse a lot more talent over the offseason, and that's really shouts out to Joe Douglas for finally getting the chance to put his step on this football team. The best position group on the Jets. I'm not all too familiar with the Jets. So
I think it's pretty clear, honestly. We've talked about them a little bit.
Give me a hint then, because I'm struggling a little bit.
Well, it includes a former Titan.
Oh, okay. See, I was going to say wide receiver. But I just had to make sure because I haven't looked through the entire roster. Okay, yeah, looking through, wide receiver is probably the best position group. They have so much depth there. I mean, Corey Davis, Elijah Moore, who I was super, super high on pre-draft. Jamison Crowder is a little bit older, but he's still serviceable as a slot guy. And then they added Keelan Cole, who wasn't one of the top guys in Jacksonville during his time there, but when he got some opportunities, he made some pretty memorable plays down there. I can remember that much. And then you have Braxton Berrios, who showed some things during that woeful last year with the Adam Gase experience. I'm so sorry that, you know, Berrios had to go through that. Any of the Jets had to go through that last year of Adam Gase. So sorry. So, so sorry. But, yeah, that wide receiver is probably – it has so much – it has a lot of depth there compared to last year. So, I really like – oh, and I forgot Denzel Mims. Forgot Denzel Mims, who a lot of people hyped up last year. He was injured a whole lot last year, but he can be – one of the top three guys on this Jets wide receiver room this year. So this Jets wide receiver group has a lot of depth. Maybe not, you know, a lot of proven individual talent, I guess you per se. Corey Davis is proven. Jamison Crowder is proven. But there's a lot of talent, and there's a lot of intrigue and potential with this group.
Absolutely. Worst position group. Here's a fun exercise, Trey. Minimize whatever you're looking at the Jets roster with. I just put down my football magazine.
Okay.
Can you name a single Jets cornerback?
Okay, give me a second. Brian Poole, maybe? Is he still in the Jets?
No.
Okay. I cannot name one Jets quarterback.
Yeah, neither can I. And I was listening to the Mina Kimes podcast, and neither could Mina Kimes. And when someone's smarter than us, like way smarter than us, like Mina Kimes can't name a cornerback on your roster, like you've got a real problem. I don't know how they're going to stop anyone this year. I really don't. I think they might be totally screwed in that regard. And even if the offense looks good, I don't think they're going to be able to stop anyone. And I know they hire Robert Saleh, and I know he'll make the defense better. But, man, oh, man, they have no talent. they have no talent in the back. They have – I do like the front.
Yes.
Quinnen Williams was good last year, really good last year. Mm-hmm. They add Carl Lawson. That's a really good add. CJ Mosley opted out last year, but before last year, before he got hurt the year before that, was playing awesome, was arguably the best player on the Jets.
He was.
Front seven could get some pressure. Yeah, but man, oh man, they are going to – quick passing game is going to kill him. And yeah, man, I am – that – it's a problem. Jets secondary, major problem. Quarterback outlook, Zach Wilson.
Before we move on to Zach Wilson, I just want to say the Sheldon Rankins edition. I didn't even know they signed Sheldon Rankins, dude. That just blew my mind. I didn't even know they signed Sheldon Rankins, bro. That's insane.
This is why we do this, Trey. So
yes, this is why we do this.
So we can know the rosters come week one.
Yes. Yes. Well, moving on to Zach Wilson, I mean, we can only go off what, you know, he did in college, which I think I'll toss this over to you because you're the one who watched BYU way more than me. So what did you see from Zach Wilson at BYU? What are you expecting anything crazy for his first year in the NFL?
I'm expecting, and this second time I've brought it up here, I'm expecting a Kyler Murray arc. I'm expecting, like, he'll be promising, but nothing will blow you away in, like, weeks 1 through 5. But once week 6 hits, he might do a few things and have a few throws where you're like, wow, okay, this guy's it for the Jets. I think they're going to struggle this year. You heard our great conversation with Josh Newman, diehard Jets fans. He thinks they're going to struggle this year. I also think they're going to struggle this year. I think the offense is going to look good by the end of the year. I think it's going to be one of those things where they go into next offseason and they're kind of like the Dolphins or the Browns of the year after they got Baker, or like the Broncos the year after Drew Lock, where they draft like Jerry Jeudy. They're going to have a high pick. They're going to spend it on a wide receiver. And this is going to look like, I think, going into 2022, one of the most intriguing offenses in the NFL. I think there's got a lot of promise with him. And I think you're going to see that promise, but maybe not right away. I think people are going to have to, the New York media is going to overreact by week 5 when they're like, inevitably 1-4, and say, oh man, he's a total bust. But give him like 2 or 3 more weeks and you'll start to see, oh man, he's pretty good. So I think that he ends up the season, I think he'll end the season as a top half quarterback, which is good. That's really good for a rookie. You're muted.
Yeah, I tend to really agree with that, because, you know, the offensive line for the Jets, it's not all that good. You know, it's a new coaching staff, big market for Zach Wilson, big uptick in competition, honestly, too, as well. So it's going to be tough sledding for Zach Wilson, but I'm actually really excited to see, you know, how he develops, because when if he can get it, put it all together, then he can be one of the more electric quarterbacks in the league, just because of that arm talent, and just because of his, you know, athleticism and that stature. I mean, can you imagine the markability he could have being that much of a midget and just throwing 70-yard bombs down the field and running past everybody? I mean, they would call him the next, you know, they call him, you know how they had White Man Can't Jump, bro? You know the movie White Man Can't Jump? He'd literally be like the next white celebrity, bro. The white, you know. Dude, gosh, I can't even say it, bro.
Dude, he's 6'3".
6'3"? He looks shorter than that.
He's 6'3", dude. Like, he's almost as tall as Trey Lance.
He literally looks like
he's
like
the exact same height as Justin Fields.
No, they're lying. You have to be lying.
No, dude. You're actually a crazy person. He is not small.
I've seen him live like four times.
No, he is not. He's skinny, but he's not small. He
looks short, Eric. I'm telling you,
he's a tall guy.
If you coming from my perspective,
no, dude,
you think he's a midget as well.
You're just wrong.
You would think he's a midget, bro. You're just I'm telling wrong. You would think he's a midget. You're I'm so wrong. Serious.
All right, dealer's choice.
The dealer's choice. I'll go to a little bit of the coaching staff here. I'm actually kind of excited to see. I keep trying to, what was it, Mike Shanahan? No, Mike LaFleur. Is that it? LaFleur is one of the Jets' new offensive coordinator that they poached over from San Francisco. Robert Saleh brought him over. What was it, Mike LaFleur?
Matt LaFleur is the guy in Green Bay, so it's Mike LaFleur.
Yeah. Mike LaFleur, okay. I've seen a lot of people say really good things about it whenever I've got the chance to, you know, read up about him. Bit of a West Coast guy. Well, I guess, you know, a bit of a West Coast guy, of course. That's where, you know, the LaFleur sort of family of offenses come from. But, well, not really family. You get the point. Jeez. But I'm excited to see how Mike LaFleur does over in New York, because I think his offense is sort of offense that I think could make the transition for Zach Wilson a little bit easier. I'm excited to see how Michael Ford does up there in New York.
Yeah, the coaching staff's definitely exciting. All right, this is where I say I respect you, Jets. I really do. Last year, I didn't. But this year, I absolutely respect you, Jets. I will be watching you whenever I get a chance on Game Pass. Jets, I respect you, but I have to do the ceiling for you now. And it's not great. You are absolutely thrilled as a Jets fan if they get 7 wins this year. That's the ceiling. 7 wins. I think that's about as good as it gets for the New York Jets. They've got a tough schedule. They play the AFC South, which contains some teams that are better than them. They play the Bengals, who are going to be better this year. They play, you know, the NFC South. You get the Bucs, you get the Saints, you get the Panthers, even who are going to be a decent team this year. It's going to be a little tough. I do think they start 0-4. But don't panic, Jets fans. Don't panic in October if it looks like all is lost, because it's not. It's going to take a while. I have the ceiling at 7 wins.
That's a good number. It's a good number. I would probably set it at like 6, honestly.
Okay. So then you're going to have a floor low. What's the floor?
My floor is like 3 wins, dude.
Okay. No, that's fair.
Yeah, you know, just because of all the factors that you just explained, tough schedule, not all that good of a roster. I think they'll be competitive at least, because, you know, Robert Saleh is a real fiery guy and he gets the most out of his guys, but it's just not a good football team right now. Like, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. The roster is not good right now. You need a couple more years of experience drafting and maybe some free agency additions. to get this football team to where, you know, Joe Douglas wants it to be. So Florida's at 3 wins for me.
Absolutamente. All right. We finish up. You don't have to give wins and losses, but in order, how did the four teams finish? And we'll come back once we finish all of them and we'll do our wild cards, because I know it'll be tough early on because I'm using playoff predictor here. So we won't know until we do all the division recaps. But go ahead, give me who the order of the division and who the playoff teams are, Trey.
I think at one, you know, still the division winner, I think it's going to be Buffalo. No indication that any team in AFC East is going to overtake them for the division title. At two, it's sort of maybe a coin flip for me because I want to believe in Bill Belichick so much, but I have to respect the progress that Brian Flores has made in Miami. So I'll go Miami at two for now, just because they're probably the more safer option. Consider the circumstances around that team. At three, I'll have the New England Patriots. Obvious choice there. And then at four, you know, last place, I'll have the Jets, team with lots of talent. Well, not a lot of talent, but some, you know, a good handful of young talent, but just improving new coaching staff, a lot of inexperience. So I have the Jets at four. So playoff teams, I'll have Buffalo. And I'll have Miami, I guess. I think it will be hard for the Patriots to secure a playoff spot if they do end up coming in third, just because of how deep the AFC conference as a whole is. So,
yeah, we have everything the same, except I don't believe the Dolphins are a playoff team. Okay. I think they just missed it.
That's fair.
I have them at 9-8. So maybe by the end of this exercise, I'll find out that that's enough to get in. But I'm higher on the AFC West and AFC North as divisions. So I think it's going to be tough for some of these divisions to get more than one team. So, yeah. All right, Trey, well, that's it. 1 of 8, done. You will be hearing this at some point next week. I think the way we're going to put them out is Wednesdays and then a random day, because Wednesdays I definitely won't be doing anything with work. So we'll just do Wednesdays and another random day that week. Stay tuned to your podcast feed. Also, End Zone Pod Twitter at End Zone Pod. And yeah, Trey, thank you very much, my man. And I think you and I should do another solo one of these before we go to guests next week. So maybe we tease it right now, where I'm gonna give you kind of two options here. Okay. We can go your neck of the woods and do the AFC South, or we can do the NFC West.
NFC West. I want to save a lot of these really, really good divisions for last. So let's hit the AFC South first, and then we can get to the NFC West later, because I'm really excited to talk about that division.
Okay, cool. So you'll hear AFC South from us next. And thank you very much. All right, we'll see y'all next time. Peace out.